How many things do you or I accept as good and normal, which, in a more enlightened future, will clearly appear immoral or downright evil? The truth is that most of us accept behavior that does terrible harm, and we accept it without blinking an eye, because we tend to use the world around us as our measuring stick. We are fish swimming in a pool of water who have no sense of the water around us because it's all we've ever known. And we deny, rationalize, or simply refuse to listen to criticism of the values we hold because it's simply too hard to swim against a steady, world-defining current of opinion. We can, however, look at the past and see how messed up those people were, since we are no longer being dragged by their historical currents. Isn't it hard to understand how Thomas Jefferson, the man who wrote that all men are created equal, could have been a lifelong slave owner? How could Southern Christians have gone to church each Sunday and returned home to plantations supported on the backs and miseries of slaves? Clearly, millions of Southerners, virtually all of them believing that they were leading faithful Christian lives, were even willing to kill and die in support of their right to own slaves. How could they think themselves religious and support such an evil? If we can put ourselves in their shoes and understand how we would likely have done the same, we might begin to discern the evils that we are living today and to turn our lives around. I think that most such behavior starts from narrowly defined self-interest, my well-being, with no need to ask what the consequences are for others. Build around that interest a concept, philosophy, theology that justifies our actions. Blacks aren't real people, whites are God's chosen, etc. And you have a blueprint for widespread abuse and destruction. I want to suggest a couple things we are doing today that will look harmful and hateful in the eyes of a clearer seeing future. I'm sure that there are more that I don't see, but we each need to start with the clarity we do have now. While interviewing a woman for my Northern Spirit radio programs, I was told that her church prohibited self-avowed practicing homosexuals from serving in the ministry. What caught my attention was that homosexuality was the only categorical basis for denying ordination. In other words, you might be accepted into the ministry if you were an embezzler, a racist, or a rapist, but if you were gay, no chance. The same church used to have other prohibitions in place against blacks and women, so I started to see a pattern. I believe that one day folks will look back on our time and judge our homophobia as strongly as most now judge racism or sexism. Another example. We are mired in a war in Iraq, started under an innovative doctrine called preemptive war. Essentially, that means we're afraid that you might want to hurt us, so we're going to hurt you first. In the aftermath of the attack on the Twin Towers, we were feeling vulnerable and scared, and the justification for war was too easily accepted by most of us, and later shown to be mistaken. Iraq was not part of 9/11, and they had no weapons of mass destruction being readied to assault us. We hit them without valid justification, and hundreds of thousands of people have died because of it. And we hear the same drumbeat building for war with Iran. Will we again flow with the current of fear, or will we seek a higher counsel? Finally, think a bit about the ravages of our lifestyle. The size of our houses soars while the number of occupants shrinks. We buy more and more stuff, produce more and more garbage, use energy ever more feverishly, and the plants, animals, land, and waters of the earth bear the brunt of our abuse. I think that in the near future, people will remember us as the thoughtless, selfish generation that enslaved the world for our baubles and convenience. I may or may not be right about the examples above, but the real question shouldn't be what I or someone else thinks. Basing our opinions on those of others is a big part of the problem. We don't need to go along with the herd, but to find a point of reference safe from mass self-deception. We need to get the big picture, a sort of God's eye view. Some will say it's as easy as turning to their preferred scripture, the Torah, Bible, Quran, etc. And I believe that there can be great help from God's light shown through such lenses. Unfortunately, they all also tend to include some human biases into their text, and theologies are built on them to justify all sorts of evil. The passages are there to justify slavery, oppression of women, slaughter of the infidel and non-chosen, and desecration of the earth. Mind you, the Bible is precious to me, but it makes all the difference how we read and use our holy books. There will always be a need to delve deeper and further. In other words, I believe in continuing revelation. One of my fundamental beliefs is that we can each open ourselves directly to divine guidance, a point of view which is beyond our particular time and space. That is, in fact, what Quakers attempt to do in the expectant waiting upon the Lord of our meeting for worship. Other denominations have the same goal with other formats, but there is a common stretching toward this end. It always involves, I think, pulling back from the buzz of voices and culture around us and opening a way to the eternal. How to do that? Volumes have been written on the subject, but the length of this column is necessarily limited. My main point is that there is a way to do it, and that it has worked in the past and could work for us now, to ferret out our mistakes and mend them in our time. For instance, in the mid-1600s, Quakers had already arrived at the radical view that women and men were and should be equal, including in the ministry. Little wonder that Susan B. Anthony was Quaker-raised, or that three of the four main organizers of the historic Seneca Falls Conference on Women's Rights were Quaker. 350 years later, most Christian churches in America are on that same page. But the example of slavery is perhaps even more stunning. There were Quaker slave owners early on, but there arose a sense of the divine among Quakers opposing that evil, and over a few decades, slavery was eliminated from within the Religious Society of Friends, 100 years before the Civil War. The same light and discernment led many Quakers to be central to the Underground Railroad, all against the norm of the day. This sort of guidance can lead us to mend our ways if we avail ourselves of it. The process is subtle. It can't be mass-produced or marketed in a book or on TV. It is available to all and involves an individual movement of the mind and soul out of the mainstream and into eternal time. We all can do it, and we and the world around us will be better for it.